Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Wednesday, August 26th, the year of our Lord 2026, 8-26-26. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you are doing well this week. Plowing through it, 10 days till kickoff. That means special teams discussion is coming up on the show later this afternoon. It is a wide open Wednesday, so the McKellar Enterprises chat box will be wide open. And so if you're not a club chief member, you can still get in, ask questions of Mad Dog, myself. Jamie Bradford will be in with the morning show, obviously, for a couple of hours. Chris Clark from Gamecock Central, David Cloninger from the Post and Courier. It's kind of a media Wednesday. We get those two guys in to talk about press conferences, the games, and all that. Two of our favorites, really, on ITG. And so that's launching at 10. G Sports Network right here on YouTube, also on X. So looking forward to those conversations later today. And then your conversations and then special teams. It's my annual, I guess people call it a special teams freak out, but there's a couple things to talk about, special teams, most likely. And so we'll discuss that. You know, some news items yesterday just coming out of the SEC banning the NFL players. It's are saying that pro players, NFL, NBA, they can't come back and play. Obviously, LSU was the one school that was pushing the envelope quite a bit there. You know, some people say it's all Lane Kiffin, but Will Wade was the one, their basketball coach was the one that kind of started it. And so, you know, I the vote was 16-0. So I don't know what the president of LSU, I don't know what the messaging is there. There were reports that from On Three and I believe Ross Dellinger, that the lawsuits to get these guys eligible originated from the Baton Rouge campus of LSU. So that's an NCAA violation. You can't do that. Of course, I think if they started going and dinging schools that encourage their players to sue for eligibility issues, then I think a lot of schools would be in trouble under that big tent. Not about pro players, but under that big tent. I don't know that you can really put that toothpaste back in the tube. But it was interesting, you know, so it's I've said for a long time about all this stuff that the institutions themselves, the coaches, the athletic directors, the presidents, the people that could actually do something about craziness like this, they're going to have to all get together and do it. But the problem is, just like with the SEC, you know, 14, 15 of the schools outraged about it. You know, I guess Texas had a kid that was in a mini camp. Maybe he signed a contract. Maybe he didn't. I would guess he did. But it wasn't like Texas was going. And I mean, what LSU was doing was another level, definitely. And they weren't apologetic about it and still aren't. The Daquan Wright guy, the tight end, they're still going to sign him, you know? And I'm like, well, but your president voted for this rule. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Somebody's going to have to kick somebody out of a league for this to kind of have teeth. And then you're dealing with endless litigation as it is. But I was glad the SEC voted to do that. It seemed like the Big Ten had its act together on this subject, and the SEC kind of released a statement and then circled back and did it. And the ACC, Big 12, Notre Dame, they will follow. They will fall in line. Notre Dame's not going to do anything like that. I mean, they're not as virtuous and high and mighty as maybe they let on to be. Neither is the Big 10 for that matter. But in this instance, I think that they're spot on in the SEC, probably because of the actions of one or two of the 16 member institutions were kind of like, dragging their feet a little. I don't know. Anyways, glad to see it. This does not affect Ethan Johnson from what I'm told. I don't think he signed a contract, and it's very narrow. It's just, If you've signed a contract like RJ Lewis, who I that was the that took the cake for me. That guy, he's been out of college basketball for a while, already was at multiple schools. I mean, I don't know if you knew this. He played for Frank Martin at UMass before he went to St. John's, where he played for Patino and was all Big East. He's been in the G League two-way contracts for I think a couple of years. And so, I mean, that guy has no business coming back. I mean, that was the most brazen of it. And I always say, like when Ole Miss football got in trouble with Hugh Freeze's recruiting, they got in trouble because they got greedy and got Laramie Tunzel, right? Who ended up being probably, I mean, they probably could have found a tackle that wasn't as good as, well, even close as good as Tunzel, but one that would have caused less problems. They recruited Kim Dichie and Laquan out of Georgia, Laquan Treadwell out of Illinois, big time guys. But you could justify it because Kim Dichie's brother played at Ole Miss, Treadwell's former teammate out of Crete Moni, Illinois, was a walk on there, so he had a buddy there, so connections. And then the rest of those guys were like 3-star guys out of Georgia. They did a good job of evaluating or in-state players or in-state JUCOs. You could justify every player they took in that top 10 recruiting class except Laramie Tunzel. And Georgia thought they were getting him. Mark Richt was there at the time. And the story goes, they walked in for the in-home visit, and everybody's sitting around in Ole Miss gear, and like, what's going on? And so they got greedy. I believe that LSU is getting greedy. Some of these things are just ridiculous. I mean, it's like, okay, well, there is a wide swath of class of 2022 players that are out there that have not gone to, I mean, that are good, that could help your team. I mean, it's year one. And you can say all you want, well, he's got to win right away. Oh, goodness, all this money. Well, that you decided to spend it. You're the one in basketball, you're the ones that brought Will Wade back with, and you knew in basketball, you have a coaching change. Even if you don't, look at South Carolina, you're going to, the roster is going to be decimated, and you're going to. I mean, I don't know what the thought process is down there, but Ross Dellinger, also from Yahoo Sports, also works for On3. Ross also he's from Louisiana, he's got connections there, and he kind of laid it all out about the state and kind of how it operates and all that good stuff. So. It's not a surprise. And as Mike Morgan eloquently put it yesterday, it's not a caged animal. It was a caged animal hire, and now it's caged animal actions. But you know what? If you want to live in the gray, this is not even just the gray area. This is the gray area as it relates to the sanctity of the sport. Then you don't have a sport, right? I mean, hey, look, in college football, let's be honest, there's been money under the table for a long time everywhere. You're not talking about the type of money they make in NIL. I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. It's a month, some cases, a couple of weeks, the money that big time guys were getting, back in the day when it was under the table or cars or houses or church collection plates in couple of instances, which is wild, but you're not talking about a ton of money. You're talking about enough money to get by, maybe buy something cool, not millions of dollars. I mean, these guys get millions of dollars as it is. But it's been happening. Colleges have tried to figure out a way around the rules for a long time. It's highly competitive. I understand that. But when you start doing things, and this is what I was upset about with the Connor Stallions thing at Michigan, and nothing happened to them. I mean, something did, but they still got their national championship, right? That cuts to the core of the game, right? Not recruiting, not, because even if you go pay a bunch of money for a recruit, guy may not work out. It may be a waste of money, and it has been. So, I mean, there's nothing that says that's going to guarantee, but when you start fiddling with the game, like bringing pros back and things like that, something that's so abnormal, that's when I kind of, that's like, look, man, Is it really worth it? I mean, you've Daquan Wright is a heck of a tight end at the college level. But you got Tredez Green. You watched him against Carolina last year. That guy was a difference maker. He's like a power forward. You've got a dude. I mean, that's just greed. And greed, my friends, is what's going to bring this whole sport down. Because guess what? College football fans are very greedy when it comes to their team. But in general, they're not greedy people. They give their money, generously to their college. All of you, to the Gamecocks, the Gamecock Club, support NIL, things like that. That's just something that one of these days, the people that fund all this, which is not, certain folks out there that are in power, the people that fund all this are going to say no more. I work too hard, and I love this sport, and what you're doing is hurting something I love. That's hard for to tell that to LSU people right now, and I don't blame them. They're passionate, they're greedy about their team. But this other stuff is just greed by professionals, not players. I don't blame Daquan, right? He's probably going to get cut out of football, have to go to the UFL, Canada. You get to come back, play for LSU, play in the SEC, make more money than you would have. Why not? I don't blame the players. But the coaches, these people, Lane Kiffin has a $90 million contract on top of the millions he made for getting fired at Southern Cal, the millions he made at Ole Miss. His life is good. Obviously LSU found some money somewhere. Probably the Raising Cane's chicken finger guy. He's worth a lot. They're delicious. I thought they were living on sauce for a while, but they're actually pretty good. And LSU found some money somewhere, and they're trying to get more. But at some point, everybody's just going to be like, this is just greed. Because it's not like you're out there asking for millions of dollars and then funneling it all to the players either. These athletic directors make one seven figures plus. Not many of them are worth it. Maybe Jeremiah Donati is. I don't really like the job he's doing at Carolina. Coaches' salaries are out of control. They're all guaranteed. You can suck and get money for your job. Meanwhile, everything's going up. I mean, and everything's going up in our country, but everything's going up. Ticket prices, concessions, the cost to travel to games, and that's not a college sports thing. You got to get the streaming services to watch it now. I mean, it's tough. I mean, at some point, this continues. If you're going to sit there and say, well, it's college football, but it's not because we're going to let pros come out, people are going to quit watching it. And one thing, college football fans, because there's so few games and there's so, the stupid rules. The quirky rules. I don't know if they're stupid, but quirky rules with, we're not going to let you scrimmage anybody like every other sport on the planet, all that stuff. There's so much of a mystery. College fans, Gamecock fans too, we all do, crave certainty because they care so much. And when you bring pro players back, you're uncertain, it throws into uncertainty. And if LSU's on your schedule, you're like, well, wait a minute. We've spent the summer game planning, and because that's what they do in the summer, they pre-scout, and now we got to go back and look at these guys and figure out, where they, I mean, it's just unfair, especially at this late moment. Now, should the NCAA originally have used some common sense and gone, well, that class of 22 is the only class that didn't either. There was no COVID extra year, and then there was no, or whatever. That was a gray area, and I think they didn't do it because of basketball, right? It was like basketball was spending like drunken sailors, which was ridiculous. Speaking of money, that sport's going to be a loser. And they were gearing up for a huge swath of players to be eligible in basketball. And I think that they looked at that at the time because, living in the moment, and said, "Oh no, we can't do that." And then so football got caught up in it, and you know, because they waited to pass the rule. Football players, the players have a point, right? But what's done is done. And so the SEC passed that rule. I don't think it affects Ethan Johnson, but we shall see what comes of it. Didn't mean to get off topic on that. Want to talk about the Gamecocks, obviously, but that's relevant to the Gamecocks. LSU's not on the schedule this year, neither is Texas. But I wanted to make sure we covered the Ethan Johnson thing because he is a late addition, and it's gonna, as according to Beamer yesterday, he's gonna fight for the third corner battle, or I'm sorry, fight in the third corner battle for the job. Him, DeMarcus Leach, Kazi Barnes. Haven't heard much about Jalewis Solomon this preseason. My man Kreger, who listens, is probably like, "Oh, he asked about Jalewis a lot, and I just haven't heard anything about him." So we will see how it all shakes out. But wanted to talk today, Gamecock wise, and this was intentional as far as the roster goes, as far as building a roster of older players. You hear Beamer talk about that all the time. You hear him talk about leadership and all that. And as the preseason has gone along, and the offseason too, you know, thanks to some very fine interviews with Jimmy Francis on 1801 Media with some of the players. You know, one of the good things about that with the media, player availability and stuff. And I'll say this, it's not so much from our standpoint, like on the bigspur.com or Gamecock Central, where, you know, there's a lot that goes into articles that are, I guess, that are things because fans can go listen to the video and stuff. Players don't always say, you know, the most interesting things. Sometimes they do, though. But what you can get a sense of is tone and mindset in some ways. Now, does it apply to the football field? I would never say that. That's just not things that that are off the field are off the field, and on the field is on the field. My dad used to tell me all the time, you know, you don't have any friends on the football field. And so you just go out there, and my buddies lined up across from him, knock the crap out of him, you know, and then get up, shake hands. We're friends afterward. So it does require a different mindset. But the sense you get from some of these guys, and Kelby Collins yesterday was being interviewed by the media, and you know, Kelby won the Gamecock Spirit Award for the defense. And, you know, Beamer mentioned that, and that was in the spring. That goes to the guy that kind of just embodies, you know, what the culture, you know, what Beamer wants and the staff want from this team, which is, you know, a togetherness, leadership, maturity, all that, all the stuff, all the intangible stuff that goes into having a winning environment. And, you know, he won that. And it kind of surprised me because Kelby's kind of been a guy that, you know, things didn't really work out at Florida. He goes to Alabama, goes back home. Things didn't really work out there. Florida moved him inside. That didn't stick because he was a freshman All-American on the edge. That, I don't know if it was buy-in or he just wasn't ready to do it because that's moving inside when you're an end. Some guys can do it pretty seamlessly, some guys can't. You know, some guys really struggle playing that game. They didn't play a whole lot at Florida on the inside. Alabama's kind of inside outside. So he's kind of been a journeyman. And you started to hear about Kelby Collins in the spring. He won that award. And then all offseason, you start hearing about this guy's just his approach is great. He's all business and all that. Now, talent's never been a question. And so you hear him speak yesterday, and that's a grown man. You know, that's a guy that's got his act together, that's dedicated, that's you know, he talked about leadership and leading the young guys and being part of the team and all that. Tommy Wadora-Jaye, a D tackle. We talked about D tackles all day yesterday, so I'm gravitating more toward that. You know, he's a guy that's been through a lot, five different schools, whatever. And he admits it. He's like, "That's my bad on some of those. Some of them I wasn't playing. And then I left Illinois because, you know, some guys that were really helping me get better left the program." And, you know, relationships, that's basic when it comes to recruiting and roster. And so, you know, you listen to him talk, and then you listen to Mazio Bennett talk. You know, Mazio's going into his third year. He still seems young because I sort of didn't see much of him or many plays from him on the field last year. I guess disappeared a bit, but you listen to him talk, and it's just all about the team and teammates and controlling what he can control. And you know, the great line he had yesterday is, "Do you have something to prove to the outside?" And he's, yeah, he kind of said reporters, but I don't think the Gamecock media around here has been talking a bunch of smack. I think he just kind of meant in general what people say. And yeah, he kind of said, "Well, you know, no offense to you guys, but we just want to go out there and prove it to ourselves, and everything else to take care of itself." And he's kind of become a leader. You know, you look at quarterback and the talk about leadership with Lenore Sellers, and every time Beamer's asked about that, and he has been quite a bit, especially by a couple of the fine media folks in the room there. He's come along with it. You know, I was told that he's really got a good grasp of things. He knows where people have to get lined up. Your quarterback has to do that. I don't know that Lenore's ever was 100% on the same page with everybody last year, especially with the line and the protections. And you know, that's come a long way. Part of that's the offense, part of it's that Lenore's has been dedicated to doing it. And so you sort of look at everything. I don't know why I have a green bubble behind my head at this point, but that's okay. All right, fix the green bubble. But I don't know that they were on the same page, you know, a lot of the time last year. Well, that's changed. Part of it's the scheme, whatever. Offensive line's full of guys like that, older players, natural leaders. Carter Miller, definitely one of those. But Jacarius Peak, who they're waiting to come back, probably by Mississippi State, he's a natural leader as well. So you sort of look around defense, Peyton Williams, Fred Johnson talked to the media yesterday. That's a different guy than the one that stood up in front of the media and talked a couple of years ago, just with the way he's out there. And, you know, I've heard from contacts, he and Sean Murphy, really the two Virginia kids, have taken some ownership of the room. And so you look around, and that's another thing to really like about this roster is the intangibles. And intangibles matter. There was a team last year that went undefeated that was full of elite intangibles. And the reason for that is, as it relates to winning and losing, which is all anybody cares about, bottom line, you win or you lose, right? And then we spend the rest of the time talking about how you can or cannot get there in the sport. You know, is when things get tough, and they inevitably will, that comes through because the maturity makes you understand that adversity happens. Because until you've lived through the adversity in a game, at this level, it's foreign to you, and different people react in different ways. Even the best players, when things get down early in their career, sometimes it's like they didn't handle it that well. That's why coaches like older teams, veteran teams, experience, because you've been there and you know how to act, or not act. That sounds like a behavioral thing, but you know how to perform. You know, just to kind of, the only way through it is through it. You know, you can't pout, all that good stuff. You got to have a short memory. And so when things get tough and when it's on the line, those teams that have those elite intangibles, you know, tend to pull it out. Will it happen? I don't know. Sometimes that depends on the way the ball bounces, right? Sometimes it just depends. You get a bad call. I don't remember. We'll never stop talking about the 2024 LSU game. And the fact that all this has happened at LSU since probably makes a lot of Gamecock fans dislike. In fact, some fans are like, I don't know who to pull for, Clemson or LSU, in the first game. But you think about that team, you know, that team had a lot of adversity in the game. Lenore Sellers goes out. He's had a great half. That team actually responded pretty well. That team had leadership, you know. Nick Emenwore with a clutch play there. They got called back. Delvon Campbell and Robbie Ashford had a big play earlier on a pass that maybe Carolina goes down and scores and seals the game. And some Mazio Bennett got called for that was the worst. The phantom offensive pass interference was the worst, worse than the Kyle Kinard penalty on the pick six. And so it doesn't always work out. And it's not always because of bad calls either. Sometimes you're locked in, and then you have one, or somebody else makes a great play because the other team's got players too that are locked in, and you don't win, but your chances go up when you have this type of setup with guys that appear by all accounts to have the right mindset going in and that have been around the block a little bit. And so I think that's, another positive as we sit here 10 days until kickoff. But we'll find out, right? We'll find out. That's I think that'll probably be the last time in a while, or until the season starts, when we can talk about the manifestation of intangibles on the field as it relates to wins and losses. That'll be the last time we talk about intangibles this offseason. Dig into some of the nitty-gritty, because two more episodes of Coffee this week and then another five next week, and then they kick it all off for the 2026 season. And it got here pretty fast. Got here pretty fast. And really looking forward to seeing what may come with all of you. Another journey through Gamecock football is 10 days away, folks. Don't forget, Inside the Gamecock's coming up. 10 a.m. launch time. David Cloninger, Chris Clark, myself, Mad Dog JB, Wide Open Wednesday. All of you, you're all invited to Wide Open Wednesday this afternoon on Inside the Gamecocks, the show and the morning show. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.